This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning!
Morning!
It's a beautiful morning!
Good morning! Good morning! Good morning. Wake up, mister!
What's up, the anchor? Mission to enter the mothership, brother.
Ever heard a sports talk show like this before? Didn't think so.
What's going on, Dirty Dirty?
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
DA, how you feeling, brother?
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Thursday to you boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. So get yours with the Rocket Mortgage. Push button, get mortgage.
Okay, how long you been on the air, DA?
Appreciate you being with us. Good final hour of the show. We'll talk about the Pelicans watching their number one overall pick, Zion Williamson, come back last night, but limit him to only 18 minutes of work in a very impressive debut. Were the Pelicans too careful with Zion? We'll talk about that coming up here in about 15 minutes from now. But our next guest, part of six Super Bowl teams. Talk about a run. He was part of all four of the Buffalo Bills Super Bowl teams in the 90s. And then both of the Green Bay Packers Super Bowl teams with Brett Favre in 96 and 97. Joining us here on the show this morning ahead of Super Bowl 54 is Don Beebe. Don, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us.
And that's good.
Yeah, this is a fun time of year because we have this final epic game to wait and to watch for. But as a player, is the days before you get to Super Bowl week, are they fun? Are they exciting? Are you relishing in the basking in the glory, or are they nerve-wracking?
Well, that all depends on how you handle things. That's why I was a big proponent of 2 weeks before the Super Bowl instead of one. From a player standpoint, it's way more. It's much better to have 2 weeks because the first week you practice still in your what you're used to. You can get all the tickets and the hotel and all the family issues done, and then you can get a good grasp on what the game plan will be. And then you really go hone in once you fly in to wherever the game is that whole next week. So much better. We did it it was Super Bowl 25. We did it for 1 week, and that was rough.
I think you're right. I think the first one you guys played in, that was the Giants-Bills one, Super Bowl 25, was only 1 week. It seems impossible today to think of playing a Super Bowl this Sunday.
Yep.
That must have been such a crash course for you guys. Did it maybe feel like that affected how you played?
Well, I think what affected Buffalo, and I'll give you the difference between Buffalo and Green Bay, because Buffalo was a better, more talented team. I mean, just look at all the Hall of Fame guys on it, you know. I don't think we handled, you know, going to Super Bowl, and it was, I think guys just took it too, I won't say too lightly, but enjoyed themselves, let's say. You know, when we went to Tampa that first year, and as we went to, you know, a couple more, you start to learn what to do and not to do, but then it got to the point where the pressure became so immense on the guys during the course of the second one, and then definitely the third and the fourth one, complete different with Green Bay. And let me just give you a case in point. So it's our fourth Super Bowl. We're playing the Cowboys. We're in Atlanta. the first half. We're winning at halftime, and we felt great. I mean, we were handling the line of scrimmage against the Cowboys and shutting down the run game and doing what we do well on, with the no huddle. We get the ball first coming out, and I think we were up 13-10, I believe, at halftime. And we come out, and we fumbled the football, I think, real early in that drive. And Leon Lett, of all people, causes the fumble. And James Washington, the safety, picks that ball up and scores a touchdown on the same play. And you come to the sideline, and you literally would have thought we were down 30. And we were down 4 points. And we had the whole half to play. Emotionally, we were done. I mean, it was because of the mounted pressure that we put on ourselves. We didn't handle the emotions of that game very well at all. Okay, we were able to do it the rest of the year, but not the Super Bowl. And then we went on the rest of that game, didn't score another touchdown, and they went on, and Emmett ran it right down the throats for two, three more, and we got blown out. Well, if you fast forward now 2 years, I'm with the Packers. And we go up early, I think it's 10-0. Next thing you know, we're down 14-10 to the Patriots. Drew Bledsoe threw a couple touchdowns. And at that moment, when we went down four, it was still early in the first half, I think second quarter, you go to the sideline, oh, man, it was completely different. Reggie White, Eugene Robinson, Leroy Butler, all the leaders on the team, and at that time, myself, we were just like, guys, we're fine. It's no big deal. Just keep doing what we've been doing all year. We're fine. And everybody was in a good mood, okay? And next thing you know, halftime score, I think, was 27-14, and then we went on to beat the Patriots pretty handily. We just handled the emotions of that game. So the team that handles the emotions the best in this game almost always wins this game.
John Beebe joins us this morning on the show, the first player in NFL history to be on six different Super Bowl teams. I think about your Bills teams often, and I think maybe it keeps coming to the forefront every year. There's another Hall of Famer inducted from the team.
Yeah.
Thurman, Bruce Smith, Andre Reed, Jim Kelly, Marv Levy, the list goes on. Not to put too much on one kick, but how different is the quote-unquote pressure you're talking about if Scott Norwood's kick is good in Super Bowl 25?
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, I don't even think the inside story with Scott's kick is he hit it right where he wanted to hit it, you know, because Frank Wright was the holder, and I remember talking to him afterwards, and he said, Beebs, he hit it right where he wanted to because pregame he was hitting him out, and it was hooking in for him. So when he hit that thing, Frank said, oh, it's in, and the thing just stayed out. It just would not come in. So Scotty actually hit the exact kick he wanted to hit. It was just unfortunate. That's not why we lost. Why we lost, we just, you know, we couldn't get him off the field. I think the what time of possession was 41-19 or something
yeah.
like that. This is absurd.
Yep.
Okay, that's why we lost. You just, you know, and you know, give Parcell and Belichick and all those guys. I mean, they're smart guys and they're really good coaches.
But had the kick been good,
yeah.
Do you feel like tries 2, 3, and 4 are different?
Yeah, I think. From an emotional standpoint, yes, I think that we were clearly the best team in the AFC at that time. I don't think anybody argued that point. I think it would have helped us to be able to handle the emotion of that game. And, yes, I do believe that it's possible that we could have went on a stretch of 3-4. The only thing that would have been that would have kept us from that is would we have gotten complacent in winning 1 or 2 like a lot of teams do? That's a question nobody's ever going to know. But I think because of Bill Polian and Marv Levy and those guys, I think we probably could have kept that thing rolling and won 4 in a row because we were definitely the class of the AFC at that time.
I will also say you guys historically ran into some of the greatest teams ever. I mean, that Washington yeah. team in 91 goes down in history as a top 15 team ever, basically 14-2, and they ran through the playoffs. And the Cowboys team is the beginning of their dynasty, 92 and 93, were their best teams of the dynasty. So do you feel like in just some ways timing wasn't on your side because you didn't play a relatively average Super Bowl-esque team?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if you look at talent on both sides of the ball, the Bills team was as talented as any team ever.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I don't think anybody can argue that. And that's including the Cowboys because the Cowboys have a lot of Hall of Famers on that team as well. It would have been a great matchup, let's just put it that way. But when you turn the ball over 7 times and 9 times in games, 3 critical times, I mean, you're not going to win a game. It's just not going to happen. And that's based on emotion to me. And the other part that's based on emotion is tackling. Okay, when they're running the ball like the Washington Redskins just shoved it right down the throat, when Emmitt Smith and the Cowboys just shoved it right down the throat, we were getting really beat by the pass. We were getting beat physically. And that's an emotional thing, and we just got flat.
So I hate to dwell on your losses, but there's another thing that I think about often with the Bills teams, and that is, while at the time there was a resentment building, oh, the Bills are back in the Super Bowl, we're going to have to watch another loss, I think history has been kinder to you guys, and people recognize the true challenge of what you did. And in many ways, there's a part of this that's even more impressive, losing four consecutive and not having won one. And that is the crazy resiliency that you guys had every single year for those 4 years.
Yeah.
How was that team wired so well to keep coming back? Because we see if you lose a Super Bowl now, you don't even make the playoffs oftentimes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want you to know your first statement. We don't mind, and I can speak for all the guys, we don't mind talking about it. We really don't. I think it's something, when you're the first to do something, no matter what it is in history, okay, and the only one to do it, that's special. I mean, to go with 4 Super Bowls in a row, I mean, come on.
It's outrageous.
It's insane.
Really? 25 years later, it's still outrageous.
But what made up that team that would be a great question to ask Coach Levy and Bill Polling, because those are the guys that built that program. And the number one thing, and I just had dinner with Coach a few months ago downtown Chicago, and I got into college coaching, and I asked him, I said, you know, building a program, what's the number one thing you do? And he said a couple things. He said, first thing he said was character. Find men of character. And, you know, and that's what he did in Buffalo. And he got men of character. And then the other thing he just said, get everybody bought in. I mean, everybody from the secretary when you walk in and you talk with her to the security people. Everybody was bought in. And that brought in the community, and the community was brought in, and no better than Western New York people. They're amazing people. And they just found guys that were high character guys that loved to play the game, that brought it every day of practice and just really cared about each other. And we did. And that's what made it so special and to go 4 in a row.
Don Beebe joins us this morning on the show. I also thought there was an intellect part of your roster in Buffalo that factored in. And I don't know if that was because Marv was such a philosophical guy. He read a lot of books, a lot of war books, passed them on to you guys, the stories. But I was talking to Andre Reed not long ago, and I said, was it interesting that it felt like there was a lot of smart guys on that team? Did you feel like that locker room picked up something from Marv in terms of maybe thinking about life beyond football, and that helped?
Yeah, let me just add one more thing to what I just said, too, because I think today's age and kids and young athletes are watching TV and what makes up a winner. I'm going to tell you, every time I scored, I think the guys that were the most enjoyed my success were Thurman Thomas's and Bruce Smith and Jim and, I mean, James and all these guys. They just, you know, Hall of Fame guys just loved having somebody else score a touchdown instead of themselves, you know, and you don't see that sometimes. And you do on the great teams, though. The teams that win, that's absolutely critical ingredient of success. Now, when it comes to Coach Levy, man, I don't know. We don't have enough time in this TV show or radio show to talk how great that guy is. I mean, really. I mean, every guy that's ever played for Coach Levy would say the same thing. Okay, no matter if they got released by him or they were a Hall of Famer with him, they would all say, because he's the most humble Hall of Fame person I've ever been around. I mean, just genuine. He cares about his guys. That's absolutely comes through in flying colors. And the guys just loved playing for him. He wasn't cocky. He didn't think he had all the answers. He was just a really humble person. But yet he was really sharp. And what you say, I mean, when you have a master's in literature from Harvard, I mean, give me a break. I mean, I don't think I could do that in 3 lifetimes.
Well, and you usually can't connect to the average athlete.
Usually you can't.
Or the regular Joe. I mean, it would be hard. But somehow Marv did that. Do you think that was through that humility?
And I think the biggest thing that he did is that he made every guy feel important by bringing him into his office or just saying something to a practice or just getting you involved somehow, some way. You know, he just had a knack doing that. I learned so much from him, and I incorporate a lot of things that he did as a head coach now, and it works. I'm telling you, it works. You throw talent out the window. Yes, you have to have it. I get that, okay? But if you have talent that is not creates chemistry and the things that I've already talked about, it doesn't work. I mean, I can give you a ton of examples. I mean, so could you right now, guys in the NFL. I mean, it's never going to work wherever they go. You know, so why take them? Marv and Bill would never have taken those guys. You know, so I just can't say enough about those guys. They built that organization from within, And it was everybody was involved and everybody loved it.
You are best known for chasing down Leon Lett in a Super Bowl blowout. You did not want to give up on the play. It was indicative of your career. A lot of people took inspiration out of that. Was there an element of that play that you garnered from Marv Levy's teachings?
Well, I think it goes along with, I think it's earlier than that. I don't think it's in taking nothing away from Coach, but that's just your character. That's who you are. You don't have time to sit there and think, oh, should I run him down or not? No, you react. And when you react to something, you're a true character. Now, I will say this about Coach. He used to say that all the time. Your character will be revealed every game you play. So he used to say that, yes. But who I was as a man at that time was my parents and mentors that I had early in my life that formed the person that I was at a very young age. Can it change as you go through life later? Yeah, but it's much harder. I give my dad and mom the biggest credit for that.
Don Beebe, you can follow him on Twitter at Don Beebe NFL. He's written a book as well, Six Rings from Nowhere, a true story of faith, of hope, and of triumph. You can purchase that by going to his website, donbeebe.com. A lot of cool information there about Don's career. It's always really fun to catch up with you, Don. I appreciate it, especially this time of year. It's always cool to go back and reminisce about all the great games that you played in on great teams. So thanks so much for doing it today.
Anytime. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. Don Beebe joining us this morning here on the show. Now, I will say that is a little appetizer to next week, Super Bowl week, where this is just my week to geek out on Super Bowl history and to talk to the players and the coaches involved in some of the greatest moments in NFL history. So if you enjoyed that, there's going to be a lot of that next week. Just know coming into it, yes, there's going to be a few. We're going to talk about horseradish ranch salad dressing. We're going to talk about Skechers. There's going to be a question here or there about some insurance firm. But by and large, next week is when, if you're an NFL fan and like the history of the NFL, there's no better place to be than this show. Because I will just drill down into the minutiae of all of the years and all of the games and all of the teams and all of the players and all of the coaches. And I will be on cloud nine doing it because I love talking to these guys. And I love these stories. And Beebe is such a good guy to talk to because a lot of those Bills guys, like he was saying, open to talking about the losses. They don't want to gloss over that. They think about them a lot. They reflect on them a lot. And there's so much to glean out of that from these guys. So I really enjoyed that. Hopefully you did as well. When we return here on the show, were the Pelicans too careful last night with Zion? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This is CBS.
It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Brand new PGP is out, the Permission Granted Podcast, the show about the show within the show. A roundtable discussion of Mraz crossing his own picket line earlier in the week is available. Check it out by going to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Radio.com, Stitcher, Spotify, and all places that podcasts are uploaded. Listen to the in-depth discussion of Mraz's crossing of the picket line and the burgeoning resentment in the newsroom for his promotion in 2020. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. Alien OG tweets, tell Mraz just to get a tapeworm. He can then eat whatever he wants. Let that worm do all the work. Hashtag dieting done wrong.
Cheese balls.
E tweets, didn't Nancy Paleo create the paleo diet? Yep. Her and Chuck Keto. Ridgely tweets, Floridians are selling their iguana meat by calling it chicken of the trees.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Ridgely? Like our Ridgely?
That's fill-in executive producer of the DA show, Ridgely.
I like to call him Sean 2.0.
That's a diss to him.
Sean 3.0? How many grades of Sean improvement to get to Ridgely?
Seven.
Okay.
The man took a sign home that said he sucked, and we think that's an improvement?
You wrote the sign.
Yes, but he wanted it. If he was an improvement, he would say, I don't want this sign. You're saying I stink. I was good at my job. He wanted it.
I think he was self-deprecating enough to realize that he had done a really good job and didn't need a pat on the back from you to tell him that. It was very obvious he learned quickly how to become the producer of the show.
He honestly, I'll give him that. He did, which I find striking that Pete needs other people in here 3 days to learn the board, but he could teach, what is his name, Keekly?
Ridgely.
Ridgely that in 4 minutes.
How disrespectful. It just should be noted that Ridgely showed up at 5:45 a.m. Eastern time, 15 minutes before we went on the air. By the second segment of the show, he had learned all of Merez's duties.
Mm-hmm. And did no social media phishing, like, oh, early bird gets the worm, look how early it is, look at, here I am at Penn Station. Wasn't asking for pats on the back for just doing a job.
Look, I'm going to be honest, Merez. You can't tell the bosses we trained your replacement in 22 minutes. We cannot. And a guy that has no background in radio, no formal training, no formal education in communications, you cannot let the bosses know you are that easily replaceable.
Look, I would agree with that. But let's also remember, he learned a portion of my job. He did learn a portion. That's not the whole thing. You can't learn my whole job in 20 minutes. You can't. 60? Perhaps. Not 20.
What do you think the hardest part of the show would be for him to learn?
I think making a precise epic fail. I mean, I tried teaching Shep. It took him 7 weeks to make one.
Fair. He nearly got shanked to the Memphis school district, though. So.
Well, look, he's got some battle wounds. There's no question. But that doesn't mean he can cut an epic fail. I think that's tough. And I think building a Rolodex of contacts are all these guests I get.
Who's booked tomorrow?
We're looking at, I'm hoping to find somebody on the Pro Football Focus roster down at the Senior Bowl.
The best part is, it is the week before the Super Bowl. So these are slam dunk days. And we tape look-aheads, promos, during the show. So Pete goes, okay, during the commercial break, DA, we'll do the look-aheads, promos for tomorrow's show. I go, okay, who are we promoting is coming on the show? Pete goes, no guest booked yet. Oh, of course, right.
The old days, I had till 11:30 a.m. to come up with a guest for the next day. Now he wants to tape these at 8:40 a.m. because he thinks the board's going to melt if we don't have something done.
Oh, so it's my fault because I want to get
ahead. Also, we're going to knock my job this week. So far this week, I have booked 3 shows. I got you 3 guys who have won Super Bowls. Have I not?
You have.
The one show I did not book, who was the guest?
None.
A man who smokes ribs in the parking lot of Arrowhead was the guest because you know him personally. So if we're going to throw slings and arrows about my guest booking, just remember this week, Ridgely, DA, Bogus, Bilotti, 0 guests, Mraz, 3 Super Bowl champions.
It's true, but that's also not our job. So we didn't fail at our own jobs. We failed at your job.
Sure.
And number two, you're taking bows without having a guest booked for tomorrow.
I'm going to have one. I'm in talks again with Pro Football Focus.
I'm in talks.
I'm trying to get a Super Bowl guest on top of that. But I have a backup guest in the back pocket.
Okay.
I don't know his name, but he was on The Bachelor. Or The Bachelorette.
Last night, Zion Williamson goes for 22 points in just 18 minutes, 4 of 4 from beyond the arc, and in the fourth quarter exploded for 17 points in a row. But even though the Pelicans had taken the lead on one of the three-pointers by Zion Williamson and were locked in a pretty tight battle against the San Antonio Spurs, and the crowd is going crazy, the Pelicans sat down Zion and benched him. Now, Gentry would say after the game, Alvin Gentry, that he wanted to keep Zion in, but he was even getting a quicker hook earlier than that from the front office, who at 16 minutes played said that Zion's had enough. Is this a bridge too far where even though you're winning a game, even though the guy looks amazing, even though the entire team is a much better team with him on the floor and you're fighting for every win for your playoff hopes, that ultimately you're sitting the guy down in the middle of that? And I would say yes. Is it overly cautious? It is, but I would rather be overly cautious considering that they were just overly cautious for 3 months here. Zion, in a previous iteration, in a previous generation, would have come back before last night. He injured himself in the preseason. There's no way it would take 3 months to get him back on the floor. They were going to take their sweet time because there's so much more science behind exactly what it might take to re-injure or have a long-term effect. Now, I'm not saying that every science today is used in sports and it's brilliant or it's accurate, because we still have unforeseen injuries and unforeseen ramifications from injuries, so it's not perfect. But being safe on a January Wednesday against the Spurs is the time to be safe. It is the time to be safe. Are there franchises that go too far, like shutting down Steven Strasburg by the Washington Nationals when they were in the middle of a World Series run, potentially? Perhaps. And it blew up in their face anyway, although Strasburg is still really effective at this point in his career, and he's still a member of the Nationals. So there is something that came of that decision. I don't mind the Pelicans being really careful last night. It would have been nice to get the win, but that's not ultimately what's going to float your franchise or save your franchise, is winning a January game against the Spurs. Andrew Bogish is in studio. He has our headlines. Good morning, Andrew.
DA, good morning. Our final headlines are sponsored by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. We go right back to Zion and those 18 minutes. In his delayed NBA debut last night, he did explode for 17 points in a row in the fourth quarter, but Zion then
done
was
for the day.
And so he spent the last 5 minutes of the game on the bench, so he watched the Spurs hang on for a 121-117 victory. Here is the aforementioned Pelicans head coach, Alvin Gentry, on protecting the future.
I'm pretty sure Sean wouldn't take Drew Brees out in that situation. Okay, but I think we've got to be smart about it. I think we understand that we have to look long-term and not, you know, one game, short term.
But in one game, Zion showed off a jumper we didn't think he had. 4 for 4 from three, even impressing his teammate, Drew Holiday.
And after the first one, I was like, all right, cool. And then the second one came, the second three, and I was like, all right, boy, you've been practicing. And then the third one, from that point on, man, just the energy was crazy.
The Pels' next game is tomorrow against the Nuggets, who lost in Houston last night, 121-105. Russell Westbrook, 28 points, 16 rebounds, and 8 assists as Houston snapped the 4-game skid. 13 wins and 14 outings now for the Utah Jazz, 129-96 winners at the Warriors. The Raptors down the Sixers, 107-95, for a 5-game win streak. The Thunder won in Orlando, 121-114, and the Lakers beat the Knicks at the Garden, 192. LeBron, 21 points, leaving him 44 behind Kobe for third all-time. Hollywood, Florida police may have to take Antonio Brown into custody at some point today. At last check, Brown was staying safely in his house instead of facing an arrest warrant for felony burglary with battery. Apparently, Brown and his trainer got angry with a moving truck driver Brown had hired. This was Tuesday outside his home. They didn't want to pay him, and Brown allegedly hit the truck with a rock as the man drove away. The driver called police, who eventually told him to go back to the house because Brown had agreed to pay him for his work and the damages to the truck. But when the driver went back, Brown would only pay him the $4,000 fee for moving things from California to Florida. So that's apparently when Brown climbed into the cab of the truck and started beating the guy. The trainer tried to take the keys out of the ignition of the truck, I guess in theory to get the things out of the truck on their own. He's already been in custody and released on bond. And again, as far as we know, Brown is just kind of hiding in his house at this moment.
So there's a long laundry list now of Antonio Brown not paying people for their services. This was a huge part of the original series of incidents that came out. So this is part and parcel for what Antonio Brown is. It is inevitable that we have a sad 30 for 30, a sad football life, a sad HBO documentary. It is inevitable that this is what happens to Antonio Brown. Hopefully it does not end in death, but there is absolutely no way this gets back on the rails. There's no way this train gets back on the rails and Antonio Brown lives a normal life. There is just no chance of that. Hopefully one day down the line, he's in a safer spot mentally. But this is what we are watching, the crash and burn happening in real time.
I mean, I don't know that he can't go back to having a regular life. I just don't think he can do it fast enough to also then play in the NFL again. For the league to say he's out.
No.
But, like, let's move on from the idea that at some point he's going to be back in the league, because that just seems impossible right
now. His NFL career is very clearly over. if he does survive this, he's going to end up being a sideshow where he races horses and foot races and becomes a Mike Tyson / O.J. Simpson, pay me for anything and I'll do it type of guy. And, you know, Tyson found his way out of that to where now he actually has a somewhat stable life. Antonio Brown is so far off the rails, and it is so obvious it's not getting back anywhere soon. And the idea that he's going to play NFL football ever again is totally out the window.
When the XFL crashes and burns again and the Alliance rises from the ashes and takes its correct spot atop spring football, could you see Antonio Brown trying to get back into football with an Alliance 2.0 team?
Maybe. Like, when does his head get right to where he's ready for tryouts with a desperate league looking for attention 2 years from now? I mean, that's best case scenario. But, yeah, NFL is totally out the window, and it will not end well. Here's my question. Does anybody else have the sinking suspicion the XFL is going to work?
Yeah.
I know that we haven't played a game yet, but the Alliance, not the AAF, the Alliance with ESPN has already given the XFL significant promotion, and I feel like because they've learned the mistakes from the Alliance's run, they are set up to succeed because, as we know, you can have good football right now in spring.
But define work. Are they going to make it to a year two? Yeah, I think they have the funds to make it to a year two. But does that work? Like, are we talking XFL football 2030?
5 years from now.
All right, five years from now.
Do they make year five?
I think they make year five with, like, four teams.
I think it's... It might not be hugely lucrative
with
in
all
year
the games
five,
on like ESPN Plus.
But I think that in year five, they're still around. And I don't think it's a shell, a pathetic four-team UFL type of deal.
Well, I think defining like will it work means 10 years from now, not only is it on, they have had some form of expansion, and it is totally okay for us in February, March to be breaking down the XFL not as a joke on sports radio.
Yes. I believe that in I don't know if they make year 10. That's a lot. But I think in year five, are they around? And in year five, are they doing okay and they don't need to fold a million teams? Yes. And do I think talking about the XFL 5 years from now will not be considered a joke? Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, because let's think about it. We're not talking about, I mean, we're talking about February, March, outside of March Madness, where sports radio landscape and debate shows on TV are dying for things to discuss.
Okay, so let me...
Can the XFL work their way in where we look at it, we have something to talk about?
Let me edit my answer. I don't think we'll be caring about whether the Battle Hawks beat the Guardians in week 8. I don't think that's... I think there is a tension, though, on the guys that can make the NFL. I think there is the MVP quarterback and who's going to pick him up. A running back that has 1,500 yards, what team needs him in the NFL? I think that's where that discussion would be 5 years from now.
So no buzz heading into a championship game in 5 years.
I don't think anybody's ever going to really care who wins and loses those games.
Well, wouldn't a fan base in St. Louis care? They had the Rams taken from them. Now they have the Battle Hawks. If it's a round of 5 years, shouldn't they care?
Yeah, but, you know, national radio doesn't talk about the St. Louis Blues in a big game, let alone the St. Louis Battlehawks.
But football's different. It's supposed to be once a week.
I don't know.
Football is different, but I what you just said, DA, to me has always been the issue for the Alliance and now for them is like at some point the novelty of like Cardell Jones or Matt McGloin or whoever that guy is 3 years from now, like it's going to wear off being like funny that they're playing football again somewhere. And I don't know that many guys are going to take this trajectory through one of these leagues into the NFL and then be good in the NFL. If they were that kind of player, they'd already be in the NFL machine and have jobs in the NFL and not need this kind of league.
Well,
so
it's going to take a guy who's, let's say, a top five pick who does not want to go to the team that drafted him in the NFL and say, well, screw you guys, I'm going to go play for the whoever enforcers in the XFL.
That could be a play. There, though, could be the Raheem Mosterts of the world that end up getting cut 6 times, end up in the XFL, have 1,500 yards for the Battle Hawks, and then suddenly somebody wants them in the NFL. And if there's enough of those guys, then the XFL looks like it's a quality feeder program.
Yeah, maybe. I think the guys that are good enough to be in the NFL for the most part will just be in the NFL somehow. That they're not going to need work in the XFL to get back. I think those will be the exception as opposed to the rule.
Look, I think at the end of the day, though, is the XFL going to be any less palatable than bad bowl games? I mean, we don't care about bowl games because that those are the next NFL players. We just like that there's football on.
Right, and we like to people like to bet on it. I get it.
So we don't talk about whether Louisiana Tech had a great final drive against Miami of Ohio. We just care that there's football on. The XFL could be successful in that way, that it's just programmed.
Well, but except there's one solitary, you know, armed forces bowl on a Tuesday afternoon in December. This is now a league playing in NFL stadiums.
Fair.
So I it might be at some point, push comes to shove, it might just not be worth it to keep it going.
Remember, last year, the AAF, that first Saturday night, monster ratings
big
on CBS. People were big fired up. Now we're coming off a year removed from doing the spring football thing, it failing. Is the XFL night one, that Saturday night after the Super Bowl, is it going to be everybody locked up and fired up?
Answer is no. They will not do the ratings week one of the XFL that the Alliance did last year.
I agree.
There's a little shine that came off of it.
I agree.
But I still think that it works. Ridgely tweets in, tell Mraz the Ridgely sucks sign will be a flattering keepsake and reminder that I excelled enough at his job for him to feel threatened of being usurped and pull the goalie and go on full offensive.
Ridgely is the best. He gets it. He gets it.
Woo!
When we come back here on the show, deep analytics on our poll question on the day and your epic fail, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Our toll-free line every morning, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote, geico.com. That's easy. Gritty, the Flyers mascot, being accused by a dad in Philadelphia of punching his 13-year-old son at a photo op. That his son had tapped Gritty on the head, patted him on the head, and Gritty had, quote, take a running start and punched him in the back. So much so that the dad says that his 13-year-old son went to the chiropractor and had a back bruise. We ask, do you think a mascot's punch could ever cause you to go to the chiropractor? 70% of you said no. 30% said yes. I can't believe there's 30% that thought a mascot punch would send you to the chiropractor. But here's where advanced analytics comes in, as Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of WatchDA.com, sends along from the Facebook results. It was even more dramatic. 81% said no way. 19% said yes. But in terms of the percentage of our audience with a certain consumer style, a buying style, 8% of our audience considered itself a Mexican food buying audience. Love tacos, burritos, enchiladas, salsa, and I am right there with them. What type of food do our listeners consume? 72% quick and easy. 8% specifically Mexican foods.
Jimmy Johnson said, as long as you're making tacos, I love you. As soon as you don't make no tacos, I don't love you no more.
Only 8% of our audience is vegetarian in the most unshocking news of the day.
Good.
Now, we were also asking you about the Mr. Peanut commercial where Planters put out a commercial before the Super Bowl where Mr. Peanut dies. He dies in a fiery peanut mobile car crash. And there's going to be a funeral for Mr. Peanut in the third quarter as part of a commercial Super Bowl night. So there's got to be something about this, right? There's got to be something about this. Now, we were alerted that apparently Wesley Snipes is in this commercial. And looking back, I guess that looks like Wesley Snipes, but really, he seems pretty old and weathered. So, been a tough run for Wesley Snipes since Willie Mays Hayes. Senor Pantleg tweets, one of those guys, the Planters commercial, is none other than Wesley freaking Snipes, D.A., and you're absolutely right. Mike tweets, D.A., he isn't dead. He will come back as a new roasted peanut. Jeff tweets, Mr. Peanut clearly being entered into a witness protection plan. This is all a ploy by the federal government. You and Mraz are doing exactly what they want you to do. Hashtag conspiracy theories. Nathan tweets, they will be at the funeral and cut away to a dark figure pulling Mr. Peanut from the explosion. The dark figure rebuilds Mr. Peanut bigger and better than before, cut back to the funeral, and back to the dark figure fades to black. Hashtag planters. Rocksteady tweets, DA, I think Mr. Peanut is rebranded and emerges as a dry roasted peanut. Hashtag you need to eat like this.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
All fair theories here. They definitely can't kill off Mr. Peanut. This is like the death of Superman. It's not like Superman actually ever dies. And I would consider Mr. Peanut on the same superhero level as Superman. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And Mraz has 106 pounds to lose in the next 11 months for his targeted weight loss goal by the time his daughter turns 1 year old.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
No. I'm going to do a boot camp. No booze at all. I'm giving up anything French fried related for Lent.
Book it.
The French fry family.
Includes your home fries and stuff like that for breakfast.
So potatoes is what you're giving
well,
up.
Well, no, because if I sneak a mashed in there, I'm not going to, arrest myself. And I think outside of cookies, I want to give up desserts for at least 2 months.
Outside of cookies.
Look.
Good value, big upside.
This is worse than my idea of a
no,
giant.
It's not, because your blood sugar gets low.
Having a gallon of mashed potato with bacon and cheese on top, you might as well have a French fry.
And 7 cookies after.
I didn't have cake.
Maybe some shrimp cocktail.
I'm only on a mashed potato diet. Thank you. You can take your curly fries back.
Any potato expert will tell you they're healthier than a French fry in oil. There's no oil.
If there's a potato expert listening,
let me tell you something.
855-212-4CBS.
Well, we're on a Boise.
You think they didn't laugh at Atkins the first time he came across with his diet, or Mr. Keto, or whoever else came across? You can't just eat sausage all day and lose weight.
Bacon, horseradish.
And now guess what? The first guy to come up with intermittent fasting, you think they didn't look at him and go, what are you, nuts? You got to eat.
What do you think the first name of Mr. Atkins was?
I know it's not Gino because he plays for the Bengals. I'm going to say Charles.
Okay. So the great Charles Atkins.
Right.
Okay. And
you
what
think
do you
when he was rolling out with the low carbs?
And what do you think Mr. Keto's name was?
Kenny.
No, I probably a
Kenny
Phil.
Keto.
A Phil. Phil Keto.
Do you know their names? Because you're laughing at me. I don't see how you guys know their names.
There is a Dr. Atkins. I don't know about
Keto. Yes, he wrote a book on low carb.
Keto is not the name of a last name. It's ketosis. It's the type of processing your body does.
Buttermilk, ranch.
Oh. All of those men or women who came across with these diets before were all laughed at and walked all over. Now I'm telling you, I'm giving up French fries for mashed potatoes.
But that's not a
giving
diet.
Up cakes for cooking.
It's not a diet.
Yes, it is.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
We have found out that Mraz will enter boot camp, his own personal boot camp, starting on the day after the Super Bowl right until St. Paddy's Day, which means no alcohol. And he's trying to limit his fatty foods and gluten-full foods and fried foods, although he is taking a break on March the 8th specifically because he has tickets to the Brooklyn Nets game. Aside from that, that is...
cheat day.
The extremely disciplined Mraz in his boot camp. At that point in time, he will see whether he's making any significant strides. If at that point, March the 17th, St. Paddy's Day, he says he assumes he'll feel motivated enough to continue down this road. But what happens if he does not see results after 6 weeks of said boot camp?
Yeah, if I don't lose a pound in 6 weeks and I've done all those cutbacks, I'm punting. That's it. I am who I am.
But what is going to be significant progress you need to see after 6 weeks?
Well, it's not even the scale. It's how I look in a mirror. If I look at myself in the mirror, I go, I can see this. Then I'm in. Let's go.
If not,
I'm out. Why suffer?
Why suffer? All right, thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer and sidekick of the DA show. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti. On the Wheels of Steel and Director of Audio. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of WatchDA.com and the Sultan of the Simulcast. And thanks to Andrew Bogish, your hero of the headlines this morning. I'm DA. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnect.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.